Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Stark & Stark's Legal Update. My name is David Krulwitz, and I am a member of the firm's Employment Law Group. Over the next few minutes, we are going to discuss what is becoming a hot topic in employment law, namely retaliation. Defined broadly, retaliation is an adverse action taken by an employer against one of its employees to punish him or her for some protected conduct. It can arise in a variety of settings and has been found to range from everything from a termination of an employee to instances where an employer has given a negative job reference to a former employee as that individual seeks new employment. Retaliation is specifically prohibited by several federal anti-discrimination laws, such as Title VII, the Age Discrimination in Employment Act, and the Americans with Disabilities Act. Similarly, there are several states which have enacted anti-discrimination laws. New Jersey is actually one of those states that specifically prohibit retaliation by an employer for an employee's complaining that they have been the target of discrimination. In addition, there are also both federal and state laws which are not necessarily anti-discrimination laws, but that still protect employees who have complained to their employer about some unethical conduct or conduct which they believe is in violation of a state or federal law, statute, or other policy. This is an important concept for employers to understand because while they may not be able to prevent discrimination in the workplace, they can certainly control how they respond in the instances where an employee voices a complaint. Perhaps the best place for us to begin our discussion is by trying to answer what is retaliation. In our everyday use, retaliation is a basic idea. It's returning like for like, the idea of paying back someone for injuring you. Now that definition is not far off from what we see in the employment setting. A typical example would be an employee who complains that her immediate supervisor is sexually harassing her, and that after complaining, she is labeled as a troublemaker for speaking up, or even in the most extreme, is terminated for being insubordinate. Congress recognized that the only way it could eradicate discrimination from the workplace was by first creating a statutory framework which would allow employees to voice their complaints or concerns without fear of reprisal or retaliatory conduct. For a statutory definition of retaliatory conduct, it is useful to consult the language of Title VII, since this statute is used as the basis for interpreting the myriad of other federal and state anti-discrimination laws. In particular, Title VII provides, it shall be unlawful for an employer to discriminate against any of its employees or applicants for employment because that individual has opposed any practice made an unlawful employment practice by this title, or because he has made a charge, testified, assisted, or participated in any manner in an investigation proceeding under this title. The Americans with Disabilities Act and Section 1981 of the U.S. Code both contain language closely mirroring that of Title VII. Additionally, the majority of state anti-discrimination laws have similar statutory language. In addition to the prohibitions created by federal and state anti-discrimination laws, many jurisdictions have enacted whistleblower statutes which prohibit retaliation against an employee who challenges conduct he or she feels is in violation of public policy. These laws are an important addition to the area of employment law as they further limit the concept of employment at will. These laws prohibit an employer from discharging, demoting, or otherwise taking adverse action against an employee because he or she has engaged in conduct protected by a statute, public policy, or case law. These types of laws are perhaps the most important for employers as they are often less obvious than those attached to the anti-discrimination statutes and can be easily overlooked. Generally, there are two types of conduct which has been deemed protected under these laws. The first type is what courts have called free access, and the second is for opposition conduct. We'll discuss both of these in turn. Perhaps the easiest instances to identify retaliation occur where the employee attempts to invoke the assistance of the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, or other state civil rights organizations, and that employee's position is somehow altered, and or the employee can be even fired from that position. In such instances, the employer's adverse action is said to deny the employee free access to those rights guaranteed to them under federal or state law. The prohibitions against retaliation for an individual's free access to these rights extends to the filing of a charge of discrimination with the EEOC or even a civil lawsuit. The employee's rights to complain about discrimination may even extend to an internal complaint made to the company. Although most employers recognize that they cannot terminate or otherwise discriminate against an employee who has filed a complaint, the Act's protections extend to many other, less obvious types of conduct. For example, several jurisdictions have also extended the Act's protections to employees who have participated in a proceeding by either gathering evidence in anticipation thereof or by giving testimony during the proceeding itself. Although these are federal laws, their protections may also have been found to extend to participation in state agency proceedings pursuant to federal procedural mandates. Employers must be mindful that any attempt by an employee to invoke the assistance of a federal or state regulatory agency can qualify as participation under the Act. In certain instances, letters written to the EEOC have even been found to constitute participation and thus protected conduct. In addition to protections for free access, the statutes also provide protections against what many courts have termed opposition conduct. This includes a myriad of different conduct, but all share one important element. To be protected, the employee must have a good faith belief that the practices being opposed are unlawful and that there is a reasonable basis for his or her belief. As such, an employee may be protected from opposing employers' practices even if it is ultimately determined that the practices were neither illegal nor discriminatory. This reasonable basis test is also used to determine whether the employee's conduct qualifies for the statute's protections. Reasonable opposition has been found to include verbal objections to supervisors, the filing of complaints with the civil rights agencies or labor organizations in either a state or federal capacity, circulating petitions, writing letters to legislatures, publishing advertisements, and making statements to the media. In contrast, an employee's opposition that violates either law or the employee's duty to the employer has been found to lay outside the protections of the statutes. For example, the refusal of an individual to work because of alleged discrimination is not protected opposition. Similarly, an employee may not copy and/or distribute confidential documents of his employer in such a way that breaches his duty of confidentiality that he owes to his employer. Finally, courts have uniformly found that where the opposition results in either physical harm or property damage, such conduct cannot fall under the protections of the acts. The next logical question, then, is what type of acts constitute retaliation? This is a bit harder of a question to answer because while the statutes clearly prohibit retaliation, they are silent as to what may constitute an adverse action. Generally, to be considered an adverse action, the employer's conduct must affect a term or condition of employment. Currently, there is a split between the federal courts as to whether there must be a physical or tangible denial of job benefits. Courts that narrowly define adverse action require either a dismissal, demotion, a reduction in compensation, or some sort of significant reassignment of job duties. Other courts, which interpret adverse action broadly, have found actions which potentially restrict the employee's prospects or constitute a pattern of petty indignities to be prohibited. Employers in these jurisdictions may even be found to retaliate against an employee after he or she has left the company if the employer provides unjustifiably negative referrals to potential employers. Having looked at who may bring a claim for retaliation and when they may do so, it is next important to consider what an employee would have to prove to win a claim for retaliation. Generally, the test for proving retaliation is similar to the test used to determine whether an employer has discriminated against an employee because of some invidious classification. To prove retaliation, the employee must demonstrate A, that he or she engaged in a protective activity, either of the free access or opposition type conduct, B, that he or she suffered an adverse employment action, and C, that there was a causal connection between the protected conduct and the employer's reaction. The employee is said to have a burden of persuasion during this part of the test. He or she must persuade the fact finder that each of the elements listed above have been met. And the key to this burden of persuasion will be demonstrating that the employer intentionally sought to strike back against the employee. Having set forth the elements of this prima facie case, the burden then shifts to the employer to produce some legitimate, non-discriminatory reason for its action. The employer's burden is less than that of the employee's. The employer must only state a legitimate reason for its action. Having done so, the case shifts back to the employee to demonstrate to the fact finder that the employer's stated reason is pretextual. Again, this is a burden of persuasion and much more demanding than the one placed on the employer. Despite these burden requirements, it is still easier for an employee to demonstrate a claim for retaliation than it is for an underlying claim of discrimination. As such, employers must be mindful that their conduct, even if they do not intend for it to be retaliatory, may end up being the subject of a civil lawsuit. In addition to the prohibitions on retaliation found in these anti-discrimination laws, both federal and state governments have enacted similar protections for complaining employees under what are not considered to be anti-discrimination laws. Such whistleblower statutes, as these laws are commonly referred to, protect an employee for challenging an employer's conduct which he or she feels is in violation of some public policy, state law, federal mandate, or other such statute. In New Jersey, the most widely publicized whistleblower statute is CEPA, or the Conscientious Employee Protection Act, which applies to both public and private sector employers. This statute makes it unlawful for employers to take adverse employment action against employees who disclose, object to, or refuse to participate in certain actions that the employees reasonably believe are either illegal or in violation of public policy. Thus, employees who erroneously accuse their employers of wrongdoing are normally protected under CEPA so long as their belief is reasonable. Other examples of whistleblower laws in New Jersey can also be found for individuals who report child abuse or abuse of the institutionalized elderly to the Division of Youth and Family Services and to the Division of the Institutionalized Elderly. Additionally, New Jersey employees are protected from retaliation for taking time off from work to report for jury service or taking time out to take care of their family and loved ones under the FMLA, the Family Medical Leave Act, or on New Jersey's version of that law, the Family Leave Act. Finally, New Jersey's minimum wage and New Jersey's prevailing wage laws also protect individuals who have either made a complaint to his or her employer or the Commission of Labor that they believe they have been improperly paid under these laws. These protections also extend to those individuals who have instituted or who are about to institute any civil proceedings against their employers to recover damages. Employers who are found to have violated these laws are subject to fine and may be ordered to offer the employee reinstatement, back pay, and other economic damages to make the employee whole. As such, and as I hope that these examples have shown, It's quite clear that New Jersey is not only concerned about eradicating discrimination from the workplace, but also the fear that keeps many employees from complaining about their employer's conduct, which is either illegal or a concern for the general public as a whole. I'd like to thank you for joining me today and for visiting the New Jersey Law Blog. While I have attempted to broadly touch on the issues surrounding retaliation in the workplace, listeners should be mindful that their own states may have different requirements and that they should seek the assistance of legal counsel when trying to interpret any of the laws discussed herein. I would encourage anyone with questions related to not only what is retaliation, but employment in general, to please contact either myself or one of my colleagues working at Stark & Stark's Employment Law Group. You can reach us by calling 609-896-9060 or on the web at www.stark-stark.com. Thank you and have a great weekend.